Yeah, really. Okay, if you're not familiar with Hacking 201, the way this works is, this is 101. Tomorrow night for Hacking 201, you ask us a good question, and we throw you beer. Cool. And not crap beer either, good beer.
Hmm? It's like the second you have been able to do that legally.
Guinness.
Doing it before, but, you know.
Yeah, if you ask us a bad one, we throw a 40 of really crappy beer at you.
Yeah.
Crappy beer. Just about, yeah, anything good. Anything made on this side of the Atlantic, with the exception of microbreweries. All right, cool. Those of you who have contributed money, there we go. Those of you who contribute money, stick around a little bit after the panel and tell me what you want, and I'll be taking the orders here. No. You've contributed to the beer fund, so we're good.
Thank you, Johnny. That was his food fund.
I'm picking up your hotel room, so. Oh, that, no, he. Yeah, yeah. Say again. Okay, we're going to get started without Randall, who is the guy who writes those O'Reilly books that on Pearl. You know, O'Reilly, they have all the funny animals on them. Randall Schwartz, he's a nice guy, but he tends to party a bit too much. Yeah.
And continue to party.
Okay, how many of you have been to Hacking 101 before? All right, fair number of you. This is pretty much an overview of what hacking is and what it isn't, a little bit of the history of hacking, and feel free to raise your hand if you got questions, and we'll try to answer them, so on and so forth. I'm Johnny X, and I've been coming to DragonCon, I guess, for, I don't know, 8, 9 years, something like that. I helped start the EFGA track. I'm currently the director of Space and Science, and I'm involved with a couple of local hacker conventions.
I'm Jeff. I'm unknown. I did the DRM talk this morning, and I was asked to be on this panel, so here I am. I've never done this panel before, so this is kind of a learning experience, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm Fuller. I've been coming here to DragonCon for about 8 years. I'm a network admin, do data security for a medium-large financial institution here in town. So I have an interesting aspect on that, and I actually got introduced to the real form of hacking primarily through Johnny X here when he actually had Hacking 101 about 8 years ago.
No, we're going to correct that stereotype for those who still think hacker is synonymous with evil criminal. Oh, what do you do for a living, by the way?
I am a sysadmin and programmer for a medical company.
I used to work for one of the largest porno website hosting facilities in North America and legally had root on Hustler.com for a while until Larry Flint bought his own data center. I now work for Google. And just so you know, those of you who are looking for possibly new jobs or anything, Google has stuff here in Atlanta. They are hiring. They plan on doubling the amount of people who are currently employed in the Atlanta area by the end of the year. So if you've got any data center experience, if you like Linux, if you've ever done sysadmin work before, submit your application, get with me after this panel, and I'll give you what advice and tips I can. Working for Google is a lot like Fight Club. The first rule about working for Google is you don't really talk about working for Google in detail, and that's the second rule as well. So if you ask me any questions I can't answer, I'll just say NDA, because I signed a stack of them this high. And by the way, cell phones off, please, or Mr. Discipline will, yeah.
Well, hell, in that case, I'm leaving it on.
Oh, okay.
What's your number?
See, I'm turning it off, damn it.
All right.
It's $1 a prod.
Yeah. Yeah, but like I said, better than caffeine, and yeah, the drunker people get, the more macho they have to be, so I can make a lot of money depending on how much alcohol is consumed. All right.
Will they give you $1 and you go out and buy booze with it?
If you give me a dollar, I'll either shock you or I'll go out and buy booze. Your choice. That's $2. Yes, I'm going to do deliveries. I'm going to deliver beer here, okay? Oh, maybe. Let me get back to you on that. All right. Who knows the original definition of hacking? I want to hear what some of the people in the audience say. You, what's hacking?
It's a term invented by Caltech students, I believe, to
the other university, the other one.
MIT. Getting into places that you're not supposed to doing cool stuff.
Okay.
All
right, that's pretty good. That's somewhat accurate. That's better than the media's gotten it for the last 20 years, so props to you.
A quick thing, we do have a mic, and Mike Mann will be running around.
Oh, we do? Yeah. We got a mic, bitch. Cool. Oh, whoa. do we have any young children in the audience? Parents with young children? Anyone? Okay.
How many people here are
okay,
under the age of 18?
All right, we'll watch our language. So, oh, okay. Woohoo! I guess we can't talk about him now. introductions, go for it. That's tomorrow night.
If you've heard of Pearl, that's me.
Oh, you want us to fill these out.
If you've heard of just another convicted Pearl hacker, that's also me. I'm a felon for doing my job. Yeah! Nobody's going with me on that one. All right, whatever.
All right. There are a couple of different definitions of hacking. Some of the real strict ones pretty much involve someone sitting behind a Unix prompt and working on code. Most people have a little bit more liberal definition, and it's pretty much the exploration, non-destructive exploration, of complicated systems. Those systems can be computer systems, they can be phone systems. Those of you who are a bit older, I was referred to as freaking. Up until 1985, Ma Bell was a monopoly, and you weren't really allowed to touch or do anything to the phone system or telephone that was installed in your house. That was all considered proprietary information. And freaking, spelled P-H-R-E-A-K-I-N-G, was the exploration of the Bell monopoly up until, I guess, about 85, the monopoly was broken up. And before people had personal computers, that was the complicated system everyone played with, because pretty much everyone was connected to it. But then Bell wouldn't tell you anything about it. So you got this box here, and people just played with it and figured fun stuff out. Part of hacking is the true hardcore hackers are the people who can figure out how a complicated system works based on perhaps limited access to it, and not only figure out how it works, but figure out how to do things with it that even the designers didn't intend, which is something that happened with the phone system back in the 70s. I'll get into Abby Hoffman and the Yippies and Cheshire Catalyst and Tap and Yipple Magazine. And anyone heard of 2600, the Hacker Quarterly? Yeah. All right. That was the descendant of pretty much the first hack freak zine, originally called Yipple, Y-I-P-L, for a youth international party line. It later became TAP, for a technological assistance program. And this ran from 1970 up until 1984, when their offices mysteriously burnt up. People who were involved with the publication of the magazine insist that the FBI committed arson to destroy their office, because they'd had a running battle with them for years over this. Abby Hoffman... Say again?
The FBI didn't do it.
Oh, they hired it out? Subcontracted. Okay, yeah. Your tax dollars at work.
Outsourced.
Yeah.
Yes.
Abby Hoffman was
one
of the original founders of Yipple, but he didn't stick with it that long. And some of you, if you've heard the handles, Cheshire Catalyst, he's come to DragonCon occasionally. He also comes to hacker conventions around the country. He's a really cool older gentleman. And, in fact, I'll talk later on about how he social engineered his own area code, essentially. Anyone know what social engineering is?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead. Define social engineering for us. Yeah, sure. Hit the mic. He's got the mic.
I've got the mic.
No mic.
Mr. Microphone.
Mic. Mr. Mic, right there.
Right up front.
Mr. Microphone. Now available for $19.95 from Ronco.
Oh, all right. I'll put my name here. Okay, name. It's a little, you know, patch here. Oh, okay.
A coarse way to explain social engineering would be lying to make people think you are who you are not.
Not necessarily lying, just letting people draw their own conclusions, perhaps not filling in all the gaps. Yeah.
Yes, it's true from a certain point of view.
Being vague.
Like I said, that's very coarse.
Just like Yoda said, it's true from a certain point of view.
Let me give you some examples of social engineering. My personal examples are, as long as I've been coming to DragonCon, I've never had to pay to attend DragonCon. And in fact, the first couple of years we were here, maybe I shouldn't be admitting this. Is this being recorded?
You've admitted this in the past, so it doesn't really matter.
Is this being recorded?
Yes, okay. It is being recorded, Johnny X.
Oh, it is? Oh, that's right. Well, what the hell? This
imagine another person's kind of like Johnny X.
Yeah.
In
theory, imagine people who were involved with, say, the early EFGA programs when the track first started up, who perhaps got into a little contest to see who could social engineer the highest ranking DragonCon badge, and working their way up the scale from participant to guest to VIP to director and almost senior director. And imagine.
No. Somebody hypothetically.
It's just what I heard. Imagine the entire ticketing and registration system being changed 3 years in a row to prevent certain people from exploiting it, which may perhaps indirectly have led to the really long lines the paying people had to go through, although I had nothing to do with that. My other feat of social engineering I'm most proud of is hosting an award-winning radio show up in Nashville, Tennessee. Middle Tennessee's only industrial noise and experimental radio show, 91 Noise, hosted by Boat Johnny X. Ran it for almost 9 years, and I was never a Vanderbilt student or on the staff or faculty, and in fact had no business at all being anywhere near that DJ booth. Well, I just kept putting myself down as alumni, you see, and they didn't bother to check. If anyone's interested in trying this out, what you do is, you know, if you're of legal buying age for alcohol in a particular state, and the people who, you know, the students who run the radio station aren't, if you supply them with certain substances, yeah, they'll get you
also
in.
Known as a bribe.
Then they graduate, and then nobody else knows that you're not alumni. So.
But we do not condone buying alcohol for underage minors, you know, and
of course
stuff like
not.
That.
We don't promote that at all.
Oh,
we
by the way, for our underage friends who show up at Hacking 201 tomorrow night and ask good questions, you know, we don't want to. We're going to assume that you're going to be honest with us, and before we toss anyone beer, we'll ask, "Are you of legal drinking age in the state of Georgia?" And of course, the correct answer is
yes.
All right, I'm glad we all got that straight.
Yeah. So.
We do not condone any illegal activity here tonight or tomorrow night or
never, never, never. No, you should never.
No, we're not condone any illegal activity at all.
No matter how silly it may be. Okay, I'll be quiet.
Especially
I'll
those
let
of
some
us
other
that
people
are
talk for a while. Why doesn't this end of the table jump in a little bit? You have to jump in because I was a DJ for 8-9 years, and yeah, I can talk everybody's freaking ears off here unless you make me shut up.
My greatest feat of social engineering is I'm currently employed right now.
That's very good in this economy.
Let's see. It's not really social engineering per se, but pointing out flaws in a major financial database software that's used by several hundred institutions worldwide and forcing them to overnight change their policies no less than 3 times in the past 5 years, probably tens of thousands of dollars across to the vendor to change these policies, including one that had a default root access for every institution.
Yeehaw.
So,
how you did it legally.
The vendor told me. That was the stupid part. The vendor told me exactly what their default root password was. And then I pointed out to him, you know what? That is stupid, because that means I can walk into any other institution that uses your software and bingo. Hey. You know. About 4 hours later, they had an email out to all the executives of every single institution that they serviced that said, we are aware of this issue. We are going to be dialing into your system to resolve this issue over the next 2 days.
Just out of curiosity, without naming any names, would these be any institutions that would, say, be handling our checking, savings accounts, stuff like that?
It may be.
Oh, wow.
It depends on your what exact institutions you belong to. So,
Joy.
My favorite social hack, invented by my business partner in crime, is you ever want to get free drinks all night at any bar that you choose? Every bar is for sale for the right price. So you walk into a bar and you say, I'm interested in buying this bar. Is it for sale? You go see the manager, and they'll bring the manager out. They'll say, oh, yeah, actually it is. And you start talking to them. If you use the right lingo, they believe that you're serious. And they'll buy you all your food and all your drink all night. We've done this over and over and over again.
I must point out that you would probably have a lot easier time getting away with that than he would.
Okay. Yes.
Perhaps. No, they don't care. As long as if somebody's ready to come up with money to buy a bar. I mean,
I would suggest if you're younger, get a Google shirt and go out and celebrate the IPO.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, we've gone in 4 or 5 times in one bar. Yes. It works. Because we go back, we go, you're on the short list. You're on the short list, but we're still looking at this and 3 other places in this town. And, you know, we're not quite sure yet. Can you bring us the secret books, the ones you don't show the IRS? And without any ID, they will bring us the secret books. Oh, it is amazing. I won't tell you what you can get done at strip clubs.
Why not? We're all friends here.
Yes. See, there are children in the audience.
I guess if we're going to say anything, if we're going to say anything that would, you know, be bad for young children, we'll just go ahead and go, warning. And parents, that's your cue to cover your kids' ears up. And then we'll give the all clear when we're done. Sound good? All right. Good. Let's take a couple of questions from the audience, and let's take some from people who aren't in the front row.
You're an ass.
Cool. Questions only, please.
Wait, you directed that at me? Let's take some questions from the back row.
The question is, are you an ass? See, I always raise it in the form of a question.
Come over here a minute.
He's got some shocking revelation for you. Yes.
Tony Smith. No?
Anybody? No.
Bueller? We have questions somewhere.
Is there a question? Question? No?
Okay. Bingo.
This is Green much shirt. More exciting when people ask questions, because then we get to riff off that.
Run, Forrest, run!
Is it actually possible to define someone as a hacker?
Define someone as a hacker. I'd say that guy in the third row right there is a hacker.
Hey, I would say...
I have a hacker inside, so...
Traditionally, it's better to have other people call you a hacker than to claim you are one, and I'll just state for the record right now, I don't really consider myself a hacker because I'm not an uber elite coder. I'm pretty good at social engineering stuff, and I like to party and play with stuff that maybe I shouldn't be allowed to play with, but I am not... I'm not a coding god.
The kind of hacker that he is, though, is he got me to believe that he was a hacker. So that's good. Social engineering, exactly.
I can social engineer.
I just have something smart to say, I think, and it might be the only thing out of my mouth. The hacker community is kind of a peer recognition kind of system. So there's not a lot of people calling themselves anything. They probably get called scene whore or something like that. Or, well, maybe that's not the exact term for him. Liar, maybe is close.
Oh.
So, yes, it's possible to... for me to call somebody a hacker, because that's my opinion of them, but not for me to call myself one.
Let me check, see if a couple folks are here in the audience. Abaddon, are you here? You went home. Iridium? Maxi Z? Those are people I would consider hackers. I've worked with them, and they know their shit. People who... CTO of one of the largest porn site web hosting facilities in North America, and if you think people aren't trying to get in there all the time to get free porn, you're wrong. A guy who has...
You have to hack to get free porn?
Well, some people just want to go about the hard way, I guess,
right.
One of these guys has got 6 patents in wireless technology and... works in some fun places and does things that he can't talk about even more than the stuff that I can't talk about. And you know, these folks, if they were here, we would put the spotlight on them and make them answer some questions, but oh well.
Yeah. Well, as a thing, I actually at one time thought I was a hacker, but not really. And in comparison, you know, I consider most of the people that show up at the 2600 meetings that we have at Linux Mall, a fair number of them hackers, but I consider, you know, compared to Johnny X and Randall down there, I know like this much. And, you know, for what I do and how much I've learned in the past 8 years, I still know this much compared to most of them.
There's always going to be someone who knows more than you. Yeah. It's, you know, you have to love to learn. It's a lifelong thing, and that's what makes it fun. If we got any ham radio people out here, got people, you know, hands up. I mean, props off to you guys. Anyone who rips apart their radio gear, modifies it, does fun things with it, builds their own antennas. Oh, come on, it can't be that much of a dying art. We've got, all right, there's a guy back there. That's cool. Get into ham radio if some of the computer stuff intimidates you. It's a great way to start out, and you have all sorts of fun toys to play with. And for those of you who don't realize it, the electromagnetic spectrum, the stuff that you can receive and even transmit on in some cases, you know how your FM radio goes from like 88 to 107? It goes all the way down to zero, and it goes up into the thousands. There's a lot of spectrum space to play with. And we've got one of the best ham radio stores, the Ham Radio Outlet, right here in Atlanta.
Here's a quick thing. How many people know what a script kiddie is?
That was my question.
How many people here have ever met a script kiddie?
How many people here are script kiddies?
How many people
here
are script
kiddies?
It's all
right. We all
got
to start someplace. And if you are willing to admit it, it's kind of like a 12-step program. That's the best way to get help and learn
really
more.
Admit that
be willing to admit it and say, yes, I want to know more.
Do you mean running EtherCap in password sniffing mode, not really understanding what it's doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Script kiddie.
I freely
all
admit,
I know is it gets passwords. That's really cool.
Yeah, I freely admit I was a script kiddie at one time, but after meeting, well, that was before I actually started coming to Dragon Con and met people like Johnny X.
He leaves me out, and you notice now.
Yeah. Well, I actually know about what I'm doing and actually have coded some utilities to help do stuff. And, you know, that's just the step. And I've actually been at 2600 meetings where there's been a teenager that comes in and says, hey, I want to break into somebody's computer. It's like, no, back up a second here. That's not what we do. It's more of information and learning than...
Yes.
Maliciously breaking into it.
A script kiddie is somebody who will run a Unix hacking package that can break you into a shell prompt and then starts typing DOS commands at it.
That too.
That has so happened
we
over
have seen,
and over again.
The porn place that I used to work, pretty much all Linux-based, and we all the time see people trying to run Windows exploits on this stuff in the logs. Rather amusing.
Yeah.
Come over here. Stand up in front. Right here.
Yeah.
This is Alanka. She hacks codes and ciphers. Yeah, come on up if you want.
Ilanka is smarter than all of us put together.
She started, she's come to HackerCons in the past. I think, what was the first one you went to? Was it Freaknik Free?
The first.
The HackerCon?
No, you know what? I think it was you came here at Dragon Con, you found the Freaknik 4 code.
Yeah, but you talk about it. Like go that. Ahead, I'll shut up.
What am I answering?
Talk about how you got into the wonderful, wacky world of hacking and what you're doing with codes and ciphers and how you got into that.
How far back should I go?
Begin at the beginning.
Oh, gosh. My father was involved with computers way back. I mean, way, way back. My dad worked in the early space program. He was on the team that launched the very first geosynchronous communication satellite. And he would also write code back when on these big mainframe computers where when the computer crashed, they'd have to reboot it by re-entering the operating system by hand in binary. Sorry? On toggle switches, right. And he would talk about how he was doing it. So.
And they liked it that way.
Yeah, those were real coders. And, so, I mean, I was a kid, and he'd take me in to work with him, and he'd program these big room-size IBM 370s to play games with me, and I'd be playing there with the key punch machines because they made really good confetti from all the little card stuff that came out the bottom of it. In terms of how I got involved with the current scene, my day job is that I'm a game developer. I make games for Play.net, and that's how I got invited here to Dragon Con. And while here at DragonCon, I decided to attend some panels, and one of the sessions that I attended was in the EFF track when everyone was coming, like exactly this session. I think this was the first one I ever attended, was Hacking 101. And so that's how I kind of met several of the people on this panel. I'd be giving a talk, and then I'd leave on games, and they'd come in and talk about hacking, and we'd have a beer at the end of the day. And through them, I heard about this code called the Freaknik 3 code, and it was a code that Johnny X had written as a challenge for the folks at the Freaknik convention, which is a Nashville HackerCon. And there was a prize offered to the first person to crack this code. And it had been a year, and no one had cracked the code yet. So Johnny X is still here. He always has a big stack of handouts with all sorts of different URLs that people, well, usually has a big stack of handouts. And I took one of these home. And after DragonCon, I think I was homesick with the flu or something one weekend, and I got really bored, and I decided to take a look at the Freaknik 3 code. And I just got really obsessed with it, and I couldn't put it down. And 10 days later, I had cracked it. And I won the trip, the free trip to the HackerCon, free drinks, free T-shirt. Not that it's hard to get free drinks at a HackerCon. And then I started looking for other hacker code challenges, and I started cracking those too, and others, and cracking those too. And at the AtlantaCon hacker convention, when they released their code on a sheet of paper, at the bottom of the paper it said, note, past puzzle crackers are ineligible for prizes associated with solving the AtlantaCon puzzle. Give someone else a chance, Ilanka.
So you got really good at those word jumble puzzles in the paper, too.
Yeah. Well, this is now known as the Ilanka exception. And some, has to be invoked pretty regularly right now, but she's currently obsessed with Kryptos, and if you haven't heard her talk on that, you need to go to the FGA site and listen to it and check out Kryptos.
She has a talk tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I gave a talk here on Friday. And there's a long story. I've been helping out with the war on terrorism by teaching government agents about Al-Qaeda codes and other stuff. And there's, through the Freaknik 3 code, as a matter of fact, I heard about the sculpture at the center of CIA headquarters called Kryptos, which has... It's a challenge to the CIA employees. There's four codes on it. Three have been solved. One hasn't. And it's one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. And the way I know that is because I went looking to see what were the most famous unsolved codes in the world, and no one had really made a list. So I made the list, and now I'm the webmistress of the website of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. And,
what is the URL for that website, Ilanka?
Ilanka.com. You can find all this stuff. And so on Friday here, I gave a talk on Kryptos, and on Monday I'm giving a talk on famous unsolved codes. All right.
Come see her on Monday. It's very cool. She's a very good speaker.
And if you're interested in breaking codes, she wrote a how-to on how she did the Freaknik 3 code, correct?
That's very good.
That's incredibly good.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah,
those of you
involved in games and gaming, she did the Freaknik 3 walkthrough, basically.
Yes.
We've got a question back here, and then we'll get to you next.
Yes, my domain administrator wants me to take the Certified Ethical Hacker class, and I was wondering your individual opinions on how effective that is.
Never heard of that.
I downloaded a pirate copy from Alt Binary CBTs, but I haven't really looked at it yet. Certified Ethical Hacking course, class, something.
Well, here's a great question for everybody. How many people think a certification means a whole lot without experience? Okay.
For the record,
we don't
see any
hands. How many people think experience
hands
is great without certification, to a certain extent? Now, how many people think an employee will look at you great if you have certification and 3, 5, 6 years of experience doing network admin and data security? So just because you take class does not mean a whole lot. So just keep
guy raising your hand, stand the hell up.
There we go.
That was a lot of effort for a simple question. I just want to know, how do you spell Ilanka so I can look up the website?
You spell it correctly.
Clear question.
Google and misspell it.
It
will say,
yes.
Did you want?
Those in the back, you misspell it, you correct it.
O-N-K-A, and if you can't remember that, just go to Google and type in Kryptos, K-R-Y-P-T-O-S. And,
not C-R-Y at all. It's K-R-Y.
Which is the CIA sculpture.
You use the hacker famous unsolved code type spellings, and you'll probably find it.
If you can spell the word
K-R-0-P-T-0-S.
Famous unsolved codes, and my site should be the first one that pops up.
Do we have another question around somewhere?
We hope so. K-R-0-4-P-T-0-S. Sorry, I left out a letter.
John, do I get a beer for being up here?
That's tomorrow night. Yeah. This is 101. You've done this long enough. 201 is where the booze flows.
No beer tonight. You guys came in the wrong night.
That's why we're saving our questions.
Questions on simple
things.
That's
good. Things. I like that.
Give them out of beer.
Give me money.
Questions on our opinion of Alien versus Predator would be okay, too.
Do we have any questions, or shall we talk some more?
Question.
Wait for Mike.
Wait, Mike.
This is a hacking 101.
No, Mike, yeah. Wait for the mic.
This is a hacking 101
seminar.
We got a little bit of history, and the papers call hacking a lot different, a lot of nefarious deeds, et cetera.
They're wrong.
What caused that shift?
War Games, 1984.
The movie
War Games,
that made me...
Sneakers, Swordfish.
War Games was the start of it, because that's what got me into it. I saw War Games and went, wow, golly gee whiz.
Yeah. War Games is the movie
and,
that made me a felon, yes.
I mowed about 1,000 miles worth of lawn that summer so I could get a 300 baud modem for my Franklin Ace 1000, which was the illegal Apple II bootleg back in 1983-84, and jumped online and never looked back.
I have a quick little poll here I just want to ask really quickly. How many people here, their first access was DSL or cable or anything like that?
First access?
Acoustic modem.
Well, how about modem? Their first experience with something was...
Acoustic couple modem.
Oh, wait. Wait a minute. I got a fun one here. Okay, everybody raise your hands, and I'm going to start reciting years backwards, and when I get to the year you first got on the internet... Drop your hands.
Wait, what if you were pre-internet?
Okay, 2003.
No, well, this is internet. This is internet only. Internet, ARPANET, BitNet, any of the big network systems. So let's start.
You still beat that?
Everybody raise your hand.
You still beat
okay, 2004, 2003, 2002, 2001,
sending and receiving
2000,
email.
1999, 98. 97.
Wow.
You're supposed to drop your hands when we get there. Okay. 96, 95, 94, 93, 92, 91, 90, 89, 88, 87, 86, 85, 84, 83, 82,
okay, now,
81,
okay, that's before I was
80,
going out.
79, 78. Yeah. All right, second and third place. Yeah, stand up. Take a bow. That was pretty cool. You're second, and we had someone else who got down in the 70s, I believe. Yeah, you right there.
Right on.
80? All right.
If we were giving out beers, you would
now
have
one. Now
do
I get a beer?
No. Tomorrow night. Just come back in tomorrow night. We'll take care of you.
Okay,
is 201 going to be in here tomorrow night,
no.
Scott?
No, it's
where's small room. Here. Downstairs, Piedmont.
Okay.
Smaller. Get here early. Otherwise,
smaller
we'll get a beer.
Room, right. We can't use the slingshot then for the beers to the back row.
Okay, question. Okay. Go ahead.
I just had a question about a certain game site, and they have your password, you put it in. Will they know, or can I find out how many characters that they use for that password, whether it's set at 8 and then anything past that isn't entered, or whether it goes to 20?
Just try the 8 character cutoff of it, and if it doesn't work, then
well, you can type in like 20.
Right, but try the 8 character version of it to log in again, and if that doesn't work, then they're looking at all 20.
And if it may even stop like at 14. 14 out of the 20. And,
try the shorter
ones.
Vary it. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
That's easy.
What I hate is when I type in like a complete phrase, and then to go back in, if I type in the same phrase, then it says no, and then I have to kind of guess at what point it truncated. I hate that.
Yeah, that can happen also in reverse against you, yeah. Question in the back, we're getting the mic to you.
I'm just curious, are any five of you working on any or all of the unsolved codes? And if so, how long have you been doing it and how much progress have you made?
That would be her.
Let's just start going down, left to right, or right to left, sorry.
I am not actually a code breaker myself. I do a lot of higher level theoretical stuff and of figuring out how to break into financial institutions as part of my day job, so... And it pays not to get thrown in jail for doing this. That's a good thing.
In terms of cryptos, the CIA's code. I'm definitely working on it. I work on it daily. I've spent way more hours than I probably should have working on it. I also have a discussion group with a couple hundred people around the world that are working on it. There was a code called the Cyrillic Projector Cipher, which was one of the world's most famous unsolved codes until last year when we solved it and we cracked it. That's the one I put the most energy into right now, cryptos.
Can you do that?
I dabbled for a while in making codes. I tried to break the code that was at Interzone this year, and I learned really quickly that I'm not good at it, so no, I don't work on any of them. Yes, it was.
It's still unbroken, as far as I know. Or at least no one's gotten to me to claim the prize. I've did cryptos on and off for a while. I haven't played with it a whole lot. I guess the last couple of years, I just kind of check out what Alanka puts on her site and go, oh, okay, and then I'll play around with a little bit more. But I still do annual codes for Interzone, which is the HackerCon here in Atlanta. That's interzone.com. And Freaknik, spelled freaknik.info up
Hackers
in Nashville.
Hackers can't spell.
Yeah. And the Freaknik 7 code, as far as I know, is also still unsolved. And there's probably links to them from Alanka's website. So check them out.
Oh, as a quick thing, how many people here know what leet speak is? How many people think talking or writing stuff in leet speak is good?
We'll see you outside.
You, come up here.
He has a shocking revelation for you.
Yeah. Leet speak is basically a... you take a letter, and like E becomes the number 3. And it's just a basic...
It's a substitution.
Those deliberate, annoying, and sometimes not deliberate, but still annoying misspellings you usually see in, like, chat forums and stuff like that.
And because script kiddies think, hey, I could show off to my friends. And, you know, to the rest of us, it's like, yeah, great. Go back to school and learn some basic American English grammar and spelling, and, you know, then we might talk to you again.
You want to think that's bad? I've got one. This came through. It's I got some source code this person was running off at the mouth, and I said, okay, this doesn't sound right. Put up a shut up. Let me see your source code. And he hands me this text file of C++, and he's got a call to malloc, and he's got it spelled M110C. And I was like, no wonder you can't get it compiled, you idiot.
Loser.
As I said, go back to school and learn how to talk in English, you know. Here's something for social engineering stuff. I know Johnny X has talked about this in years past. Is how many people like the current public school system in America?
Like in what sense?
How many are still stuck in it?
3.
Well, yeah. Okay. How many people think you can do a little bit to change it little by little?
Yeah.
Good. Get involved. Do social engineering. Get involved in either the school board, city council. Talk to the teachers, anything, volunteer time.
Volunteer to speak.
Yeah, volunteer to speak, coming into classes.
Volunteer to fix
your
computer.
Well, yeah.
Volunteer to hack their computer. Be careful about that. Yeah. You read far too many instances of shooting the messenger. So.
Yeah, because...
They won't let me touch computers anymore.
Is the only chemical storage room in your school some way to change the public school system?
Change in what manner? Are we talking like big booms or something a little bit more civil?
We're not advocating anything illegal.
Nothing illegal tonight.
Everything just a chemistry experiment, right?
Yes.
Like having is it potassium in water or sodium and magnesium? So, yeah.
There's far too much knowledge.
That's
in this
a bit
room
rare.
Already.
Francium is.
Question? Yeah. Question somewhere? Back.
Way in the back.
Run, my man, run.
I didn't answer the unsolved cryptos hacking question because I'm easily distracted by bright, shiny objects. So, anybody else that is? If you're a cat, you're going nuts right now. we got it. All right.
I have a question. I'm a boring librarian, and I just want to know if you could recommend any books on hacking or social engineering that would be good to read. Sorry.
Good books on hacking and social engineering. Well, actually, for the social engineering stuff, Kevin Mitnick's Art of Deception is pretty good. Also, the guy who, what was that movie, Catch Me If You Can? Anyone know what that guy's name is? Was that Paulson? No, I said, wait a minute, okay. The guy in the Catch Me If You Can movie has written a couple of books, and they're pretty pretty good, Kevin Paulson, as he said. As far as the technical, the hacking stuff, books have a very short half-life on this kind of stuff. I personally kind of like the, if you're total newbie to this, the Found Stone stuff, like...
go back and read the 2600 stuff, the stuff they published, the hacker things, the series.
Yeah.
Whatever, that's 57 of them.
Yeah, Frack is good. What's the exact title of the Found Stone books, like Hacking Exposed or Hacking Explored? Or?
There is Hacking Exposed.
Actually, all right, let me give you an example of two that I really enjoyed. They were called Hacker's Challenge and Hacker's Challenge 2, and the book was split up into two sections. The first half was about a dozen sanitized case studies, and it set up a scenario and said, basically, this is what happened, this is what the people did, both on the attack and defense side. What would you have done? And then the second half of the book goes through each scenario step by step and says, this is what they did to attempt to resolve the situation, this is what they would have done in hindsight, and these are the measures that have been put in place to prevent the situation from happening again. I think those are very interesting books. For instance, one of them had a situation I knew nothing about. I thought it was absolutely fascinating in that it was bypassing routers and firewalls by basically using a PCL, that's a printer control language, to get into large network printers, many of which have a fairly decent-sized memory in them nowadays compared to computers 10, 15 years ago, and a lot of them are using Linux-based or open-source-based directory structures, so people would connect to these computers and use them to bypass security features and get inside networks to explore, and they would even upload their own files and hacking tools into these computers to help them compromise networks from the inside and leave no logs inside the routers or the firewalls.
HP Jet Direct cards are your friends sometimes. And especially since by default everything's wide open, everything has a default password, which is usually none, and it's usually set up as user-friendly as possible. Says, "Hey, here's how you ping an IP address so you can verify connectivity."
Anyway, Hacker's Challenge and Hacker's Challenge 2, that's the same company that I believe the book's called Hacking Exposed, and they've got a couple other ones: Hacking Linux Exposed, Hacking Windows 2003 Exposed. They're decent start guides, and the only downside is that these books do have a pretty short half-life. Let me think of some other ones. Definitely read...
Bug Track.
Yeah, Bug Track. Hell, sometimes even going back and reading RFCs is good. Request for Comments.
As a quick thing, anybody who subscribes to Bug Track, make sure your email provider can provide you enough email space.
Yes.
Because you can get easily, you know, if there's a big flood, you can easily get several hundred to several thousand emails in a week.
It is fascinating reading the mailing lists like Bug Track and the parallel lists like that, because, for example, there's a Linksys router that has a wide open sysadmin password that can't be changed right now. And that kind of stuff you find out by reading that list, and that's current stuff the last 2 days. They've discovered this, and they've been passing.
How many people have a DSL connection with a Linksys router? Or have a Linksys router somewhere?
Wide open root password.
There was a flap recently about Cisco's iOS, up until a very recent version, had a default password in it that was pretty much hard-coded into the iOS.
Yes.
Crazy
stuff out there, these guys.
This past week, there was a remote exploit that you can actually shut off service to a Cisco router just by using Telnet, and a malformed TCP
that's a hacker tool
can actually Telnet. Shut down the Telnet or reverse Telnet or web service. So you, if it's at a remote location or in a hardened location, you're going to have to get in a car, drive to that location, flip the switch again, and bingo, it's back again.
Oops.
Yeah, because it destroys remote access to it.
I wanted to address the librarian question just on the crypto side. It kind of depends if you want a book on hardcore cryptography or if you want a general overview book. For a general overview book, the number one book I recommend is called The Code Book by Simon Singh.
Oh, yeah.
It's an excellent, excellent text. In terms of day-to-day stuff, the best newsletter to subscribe to, in my opinion, is one by Bruce Schneier. It's called Cryptogram. It comes out once a month and he covers like little bits and pieces of crypto news from all over the world.
Question in the back, and then we'll start moving up to the front again.
All the way to the very back.
Where's Mike?
Right here. These days, mobile phones are probably the most general computing platform on the planet. What resources are there out there that allow people to explore this wide variety of mobile phone platforms?
Google.
Oh, here's another tip. If you ever subscribe to any like 2600 email list or any other hacking email list, if you don't do a Google search first and if you ask a really inane question, you will get pointed out to go do a Google search or RTFM or anything else a little bit less polite.
Read the friendly manual.
Yeah. Yeah, and
with different versions of F, yes.
Yeah, because Google, you know, with between their Google search and the news groups, you know, if you can't find it with Google and Yahoo out on the internet, it's probably not out there easily find, you know, to find. So,
Stephen, lots of things you shouldn't be able to find with Google. The recent Visa card number hack, that was great.
Yeah.
Yes, you can
or open wireless networks at major. Yeah. Not hotels, but. Without naming names, how many people had their credit card canceled this past spring? And it was just canceled because you didn't know exactly why it was canceled until you got a notice and your bank called you and said, hey, we canceled your Visa card.
No, I went ahead and canceled mine ahead of time.
Well, in case anybody didn't know about it, what happened is there was a major retail store that, you know, is a warehouse store that had a open wireless network connection. And what happened was two guys were sitting down in the van, and they figured out, hey, it was coming from the store, and they finally found a van with a guy with a radio, you know, sticking an antenna out the window, you know, or in the window, you know, on their dashboard, and two guys sitting there with laptops, you know, just in the parking lot, doing nothing. And the cops came and knocked on their door, and that's what they caught. So
just jump on in.
Yeah.
Nobody we know.
I just wanted to let everybody know, if anybody else staying in this hotel is upset that they found out that the wireless network costs money, when on the DragonCon website it said it was free.
Yes.
Well, there's actually now a Linksys router next door that's unsecure that you could use.
Thank you, sir.
Now that you've said that, it's probably going to disappear. So, you know,
thanks a lot.
Location.
Now everyone's going to, you know, try to jump on it, and my bandwidth is going to go to hell. I appreciate it.
Well, I wouldn't worry too much about it. The admin isn't going to do anything about it until Tuesday when he finds out his password doesn't work anymore.
Let me guess. SSID Linksys, channel 6, no WEP. Fresh out of the box.
What was the password? What was the password? Admin?
Admin.
Yeah. Is it admin or sysadmin?
Admin. Everybody knows I love it, yes. We're speaking to the right crowd.
Yeah, apartment complexes are fun for that, too.
Did we have another one kind of further? There we go.
Hi, I'm a kind of fledgling network administrator, but most
God help you.
Yeah. Most of my life is spent on Google. I have probably one book that I still rely on, and that's a Unix Administrator's Handbook.
A kick-ass book.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is there any books that you guys rely on, and what are your major sites? I missed the first half of this. I apologize.
By learning Perl, it keeps me off the street and out of jail. Please.
Alt binaries ebooks.
If Learning Pearl shows up there, I'm upset.
Any book that has an animal on the front is pretty good.
I know.
But I know you mentioned like Bug Track. I assume you guys occasionally read Security Focus, but what are the other big ones that /dot?
Well, here's a hint. I am subscribed to every single Security Focus email list that they have, and as a result, I get half the incoming email from my organization every day. So.
Sage is good. That's an online site system administration
guild.
Guild. I forget
with
what
an extra
E is
E.
For.
Yeah. E stands for extra.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
A good news site that's just started that I moderate is called sysadmintalk.com. There's a lot of question and answers.
Oh, that's you?
Yes, that's me.
Cool.
Oh, okay.
I don't own the site. I'm one of the moderators. And there's a lot of people there that will answer your questions. But we will do the RTFM every once in a while as well. So... Sorry, I had to plug once.
That's great.
All right, I guess this gentleman and then you next.
What's your opinion of TLS, Transport Layer Security, against SSL version 3? We have software that we're bringing into our organization that can support both, and I've heard conflicting, you know, points about TLS.
Oh, TLS and...
And SSL version 3.
Ilanka?
I have no opinion at this point. Someone else takes care of that. That's a different group within Google.
Okay.
Sorry. What was your website?
Yeah. She gets a beer for stumping the panel, right?
Yeah. Just as a quick hint, if you roll out a product that uses like SSL 2 and 3, don't just kill SSL support 2.0, because a major credit bureau did that this about a Monday and didn't tell any of their clients. So, and as a result, nobody could pull credit reports for about 100 institutions for about 8 hours. Which meant nobody got approval on.
I have a client who has designed a device. It's a handheld storm detection device, and it uses a combination of proprietary patented hardware and proprietary patented software as well. They are very concerned that a competitor or a number of competitors might try to get their hands on their software. Right now, what they're doing is they just RC4 encrypt the software, and it's encrypted on the ROMs on the device. But that probably is not sufficient, and they're thinking about going, you know, a little bit more secure in protecting their software. What sort of challenges do you have in an environment where you have firmware on a device, which is out there and people can get it, and you don't want people to get access to the software?
Ultimately, there's no way to protect that.
You can bury the firmware in epoxy, for starters.
How many people have ever used an RSA secure ID? How many people know that if you break it, if I'm remembering correctly, it will actually break the encryption, because it's what it is. I believe it's hard bonded to the case. So if you break the case, chip's gone.
I've stood in front of people that have broken that, though.
Have they successfully utilized?
Yes, okay. They can beat it. It's beaten.
Didn't somebody also crack RC4, 56, or 128?
And RC4 was cracked, yeah.
Both 56 and I think they're...
I think 128 went last year, didn't it?
64-bit has been cracked.
I think Distributed Net got 128 last year. I'm not sure.
If people want it bad enough, they'll get at it. There's really no way around it. And, I mean, the fact that I was standing in front of people that were talking about how they'd broken Secure ID, I was going, okay, this can be broken. It can always be broken.
We're going to have to continue a lot of this tomorrow, but before we wrap up for the evening, I want to just toss a couple ideas out there. In a lot of ways, the original goals of the hacking community have been met. And when I say that, what I mean is we have access to computers nowadays. We have access to computers that are powerful beyond the dreams of what people imagined, you know, 20, 30 years ago. We've got net access. In most cases, people have got fast net access. We've got access to the phone system now. If you want to set up a PBX in your house, you can. We've got access to cheap hardware. We've got access to free and open source operating systems, compilers, the tools to do anything you want with computers and the phone systems. Where do we go from here? There are a lot of complicated systems that affect our lives every day that a small group of people have a vested interest in keeping us ignorant about the inner workings of these systems and don't really want the general public to get too involved with them.
Like DVDs. These,
well, I was thinking in broader terms like our legal and political systems.
Oh.
They are very complicated systems with bizarre rules that are really in need of a code audit and cleanup. And a lot more people need to get involved with these systems.
Diebold.
Yeah, you do a Google search on Diebold, Choice Point. I'm sure you all know about the RIAA. There are other people out here and other groups and organizations that have a lot of money that are manipulating these systems to their advantage. And our legal and political systems, we all have access to and we can all get involved with, and we can try to manipulate those systems and bring them back where they're more beneficial to us than large corporations and the already super wealthy.
I know.
That's just my two cents.
Look at the XPRIZE and look at open access to space is slowly but surely getting there in comparison to NASA, you know, launching or the military launching. Now you have Spaceship One.
And if this doesn't scare the hell out of you, it should. As computational power gets cheaper and cheaper, we are beginning to hack things like DNA of every living organism on the planet, and doing interesting and creative things with that, and in some cases doing things where we really don't know what the outcome is going to be or what the long-term effects are. And let's see, we talked about space. Hacking matter That's the name of a book, a very interesting book you should check out if you're into quantum physics, nanotechnology, and weird mutant cutting-edge science. It is probably closer than we think it is. I definitely recommend that. There's all sorts of bizarre implications. We'll get into more in-depth tomorrow when we've got more time and more alcohol to lubricate our imaginations.
Contribute to tomorrow's beer fund.
Yeah. Call for beer fund.
Beer fund.
Come on, walk on up.
Oh, yeah. If you don't want to contribute to beer, you may have noticed that a certain young lady who usually shows up for the Hacking 101 and 201 panels and wears very, very, very little clothing, like the other year she was wearing basically an IDE cable and two pieces of electrical tape, she's not here this year. She couldn't afford Dragon Con, so we're taking up a collection to get her here next year. And, if you want to throw in any small scraps of potential costume for next year as well, then, yeah, come on up. This is, open source volunteer project. And, there we go.
Oh, and even if you are of questionable age, you can still donate to the project. I mean, I did for many, many years.
We're all
I just had fun watching and babysitting all the drunk adults. You know, that was quite fun for me,
Oh, were you the guy we left in charge of Rattle and Joe that year?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
yes.
He got to babysit two adults, I guess. Yeah. That was a technicality. I've never seen anybody eat a quarter sheet of acid at a time before. Whoa.
Just remember that.
Yeah, kids, don't do that
tomorrow,
or you'll wind up like us.
Oh, they don't sell alcohol tomorrow.
So, go ahead, just yell.
They don't sell alcohol tomorrow.
Yes, that's why we're collecting for the beer fund tonight. And who wants to go on the beer run with me? We prefer to have very young, underage people actually conduct the financial transaction while we carry the booze out of the place. There's a package store just across the street. So anyone who wants to go on the beer run with us, come on up. If you're interested in possible Google employment, come on up. Maybe I'll trade tips on Google for bucks. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, all the money's coming up here. Cool.
We're wrapping up.
Wow, lots of money. Yeah, come on. Empty. Break those wallets out, people. Throw the money up here on the table. Come on. Yeah, we're wrapping up, and
thank
we're taking
for
donations.
Out. Appreciate it. Come to Hacking 201 tomorrow night.
Woo-hoo.
See more of
those
this.
Of you
beer.
Who are contributing to the beer fund, also come up and tell me what you want us to purchase. So, what's your favorite booze? Well, we got Guinness.